The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Doing this morning, it is Tuesday, the 3rd of September. 58 degrees on our way to about 90 or so today. Join the conversation at 770-5633-770-KMED. My email, by the way, is bill@billmyersshow.com. I didn't do a lot of emailing over the weekend out of pocket and ended up traveling to Ohio later on Thursday, and it was a lot of time traveling. Surprising how long it takes. Really, you know, you end up budgeting about 12 hours going in each direction, actually a little bit more. Actually, I don't think it was quite, it's actually a little smoother coming back, oddly enough, in different ways. But still, it was just a fascinating trip, visiting some old relatives, my sister, Aunt Sherry Fisher from Elizabeth, Pennsylvania, where my mother came from, ended up coming to stay with me in Sandusky at the motel that that I had rented. It had two double beds in there. I was supposed to originally have had my brother Mike come up there, but Mike was not able to make it up from North Carolina for the trip. And so Sherry popped up for a day, and that was great. And she brought hoagie sandwiches and homemade cookies and things like that. And so we didn't have to buy many meals for at least that first day, and then went and visited my cousins in Sandusky, some distant cousins on my mother's side of the family, the Seipolts, and Glenn and Betty. Glenn died a couple of years ago, and in his late 80s, and Betty in her early 90s is still going strong. And so, you know, we had a good get together and talking. And by the way, Glenn is the fellow I may have mentioned on the air a few years ago, in which when Linda and I were visiting my father in Sandusky in Huron, Ohio, this is before he started the real big decline in Parkinson's. And so we had not actually arranged a visit with them, but we were driving through Sandusky. And then I saw Putnam Street. I'm going, hey, Lynn, I have a cousin here. I remember a cousin from way back, I think like second or third cousin, again. But yeah, the Seipolts are still here, 1313 Putnam Road, or Putnam Avenue. And so we pull up to the house, and then we park the car, and then out comes Glenn, wiry little feller, you know, one of those things, and kind of short, wiry fellow with, you know, the black stout kind of work shoes, that kind of thing, black pants and a white T-shirt. And he gave me that look and said, "Who are you?" And in other words, what are you doing on my property? Kind of. The only thing that was missing was the shink, chink, the racking of a shotgun sound. And I said, "I'm Billy, Carol Sue's son." And then Glenn said, "Well, come on in." And then we had like hours and hours of sweet tea and conversation, because once it was known that we were not a threat and we were not there to rip him off, I guess the neighborhood had declined over the years. But it was a great together. It was great to see the rest of the cousins that are still there, and Sherry Seipolt. I forget her married name. You know, I know them, you know, this way, and catching up on things. And there was a lot of interesting conversation with those relatives, talking with Sherry from Western Pennsylvania, because of course these are big battleground states. Pennsylvania is certainly a big battleground state. And also talking with Justin and a bunch of other people, and some of my old classmates from the class of 1979 that I think have a lot of play in the political realm this year. And essentially, how do you stop the decline, and how do you bring back America? Because it is... Well, I don't know how I think I'll start with describing just the way that Sandusky, Ohio has redeveloped itself over the years. Sandusky has been going down the road that Medford and many other cities, Ashland and various other folks have been doing for quite some time, which is, we can't really make things or do something which is absolutely useful, so we're going to have to redesign ourselves for sustainable tourism. In other words, stupid money, stupid discretionary money, and try to make the best of it. And so Sandusky always had Cedar Point. Cedar Point's a big amusement park on Lake Erie. I don't know if you've ever been up in that neighborhood or not, but that was a place that we locals would go to all the time. It was fun to do in the summertime. It was seasonal and wasn't open in the winter. As you can understand why, there they get real winter. But Cedar Point had been circling the drain here for a number of years, and COVID just about put it under, and people weren't just were just going to that that kind of entertainment venue, as it were. Nobody was going. And then Six Flags, the Six Flags chain, bought it a couple of years ago. And so now they're trying to push it, but yet the visitors really haven't come back, but yet everything about the way the town is set up reminds me of what the city of Bedford's trying to do. Well, we have to have a convention center, and we have to have, you know, we have to have the water park. I know they talk about the water park as if this is, you know, something which was designed for just we the people, but I think we understand that ultimately it was about taxpayers funding a potential tourism attraction. And that's what they've done over in Sandusky. They did a lot of that, too. But they did one better. They ended up putting in a big, large, commercial water park. Huge water park called Kalahari. Really big. And so that actually works year-round, unlike Cedar Point. So they're betting everything on the tourism, except that it's really boomy and busty. And one of the biggest problems that they're having there, and we've had some of the same conversations even down here, lack of housing. Because what has happened is that to service the tourism industry, everybody, including big investors, buy up blocks of housing, and they end up turning them into vacation rentals, Vrbos. You know, they turn them into Vrbos and all of these short-term rentals. Because they can actually make more money with short-term rentals than they can with selling these people housing. So you have housing that has exploded in cost for the locals, and wages, which have not really kept pace. Their wages are lower than what we experience here in Southern Oregon. You know, they're not putting signs in the fast food restaurants talking about $20 an hour hiring. It's more like in the neighborhood of I think it's 12 to 13, maybe a little bit less, but somewhere in that neighborhood. But the housing has just exploded in cost, and what good housing was available ended up being turned into vacation rentals. So they're betting everything on this this shift to tourism and discretionary money. And let me tell you, the space between Milan, Ohio, that little town of 2,500 where I grew up in the early 1970s, and Sandusky about 15 miles later, the entire interstate or US 250, the 15-mile road, is like chain, 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 this, chain, that, chain, restaurant, chain, hotel, chain. There seems to be, I mean, and we see a lot of that here in Southern Oregon, but nothing like what they have done over in that particular area. There were times that I would actually jump with joy and call out to Sherry when we went into the Sandusky because, oh my gosh, there was a business that I recognized from 30 or something years ago when I would last go there. Actually, the last time I was up there was about 15 years ago before my father died. It's the Jolly Donut, a business I actually recognize. But other than that, everything else, torn down, eviscerated, rebuilt. It's the Kroger, which is the Fred Meyer that we have here. You know, how many Chipotles can you get in there? There aren't even any local coffee dealers of any sort of sort. Like, you know, you'll still see some people that put up their own independent coffee places around here in Southern Oregon. Nope, not there. Starbucks, 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 Starbucks. And boy, I can't tell you how much I hated giving Starbucks some money over in Ohio because there just wasn't a lot. It was either that or McDonald's. And by the way, my McDonald's, can anybody tell me what a McDonald's, what do they call those things, McMuffin? Can anybody tell me what a McDonald's McMuffin meal cost today? I haven't got a McMuffin meal in a local McDonald's for a long, long time. Can anybody tell me? Because you know how much it costs in Ohio? $10.89. Now, that's sales tax in there too. So you got a sales tax. So I figure it's about 10, a little, about 10 bucks is what it was. Is that what a McMuffin meal costs now in Oregon? Because I haven't gone to McDonald's for breakfast for a long time. I'm usually working during that time. And then after that, if I'm going to go to McDonald's, I'll get a Big Mac, you know, later on. Does a Big Mac meal cost $11? Because that's what it costs in Sandusky. I could not believe that. Food costs more there than it does here. And maybe this has to do with our location to the San Joaquin Valley, in which a lot of what we're eating here ends up being trucked and shipped over to Ohio at a considerably higher cost, although they grow lots of corn, wheat, and melons, things like that. But I wonder if a lot of the lettuces and the celery and stuff like that still being shipped in from California. I couldn't really tell. But food considerably more expensive than it is out here. And we're not even thinking of our stuff as cheap. Real estate's still less expensive than here overall. The house that I grew up in, there were two of them that I visited. They both price out at about, the second house is 3,600 square feet in downtown Milan. Nice old Victorian house. And you can pick it up for about, $290,000, $300,000 is what you can get that for. The other house out on 113, 2,300 square feet, old Victorian, nicely redone, with about an acre of land. $270,000. You know, so the real estate's still considerably more affordable than we have here. But wages a little lower, and they're doing everything they can to hang it on sustainable tourism, getting people to come in and just lay down their money. And there's talk now about a casino, seeing if they can bring a casino to the area. I guess they have to keep bailing out those state pension costs. You got to find some way of doing it. So it's just a little thumbnail sketch there, but it was it's quite surprising. And I'll talk later this morning about how the economy there is going as far as the former Rust Belt industries of the automobile industry, which kind of reminds me very much of the conversation that we're having here about the timber industry. This is the Bill Myers Show, and you're on KMED at 99.3 KBXG.
Rev up your engines, folks. American Rentier Garage is putting on the brakes this season, ending the high cost of vehicle repairs with their exclusive offer. Discounted Oregon e-deal certificates good for a whopping $75 off any service. Whether it's a routine checkup, oil change, brake repair, or full-on engine overhaul, trust the expert technicians to get the job done right. Visit OregonEDeals.com to snag your discounted certificate. Drive in. Save big. American Rentier Garage, across from Elmer's on Biddle.
Fontana Roofing is celebrating their 27th anniversary installing roofs in Southern Oregon. And the universe seems to be giving the crew subtle reminders.
Better slow down a bit. The speed sign clocked you at 27 and a 25.
Whoops. I'm distracted looking for the job site. What's the address again?
27.
Okay, we got another block, so looks like another nice day. High of 81.
27.
What?
81 Fahrenheit is 27 Celsius.
Weird. Oh, there it is, and we're right on time.
Actually, we're 3 minutes early. It's
27 after. Okay, enough Twilight Zone. Hand me my tool belt and let's get cracking.
Here you go. Whoops.
Roofing nails all over the floorboard.
27.
What is this? Rain Man?
Count them.
It's no coincidence why Fontana Roofing has been serving the Rogue Valley for 27 years. Our longevity is owed to our hardworking employees, past and present, and our loyal customers. Thank you from Fontana Roofing.
Hardcastle Trailers, where the customers came.
Looking for a safe place to store your RV, trailer, or boat? Hardcastle's offers a secure storage lot located conveniently on-site with a keypad entry. With spots filling up quickly, stop by today to reserve yours. While you're there, check out the fully stocked line of enclosed, dump, flatbed, and utility trailers. Hardcastle's friendly and experienced staff are always available to help you find what you need. Open weekdays 8:30 to 5, Saturdays 9 to 3. Hardcastle's, where the customer is king.
Hi, I'm Dwayne Barkley with American Rentier Garage, and I'm on KMED.
25 minutes after 6. I'm so glad you're waking up with me this Tuesday, this Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday, 770-5633. Anything on your mind? Certainly have some time to join in on this. And Chuck, I haven't had the pleasure of talking to you recently. How are you doing this morning? What's on your mind? What are you thinking?
Yeah, listen, my folks grew up. I heard earlier you mention Elizabeth, Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
My folks grew up in Elizabeth, Pennsylvania.
No kidding. My gosh. What era was that, Chuck? How long ago?
Oh, geez. A long time ago. Probably 60s.
Yeah. Did the folks there work for the U.S. Steel back in the day, which everybody else seemed to do in those days?
No. My grandpa worked at run the trains with the conductors.
Oh, the Pittsburgh and Lake Erie Railroad running through there, right?
Probably so, yes.
Yeah.
And also, I remember Rainbow Garden, an amusement park, a large amusement park called Rainbow Garden. I remember that.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the one, what they call Kennywood now. Kennywood's still the big park
Kennywood
over
in another one.
Yeah.
Do you think it's still running, Bill?
Is what now?
Do you think Kennywood or Rainbow Garden? Or
Rainbow Garden's, from what I understand, long gone. Kennywood is still going on. It's kind of the Cedar Point of Sandusky, like I was talking about, Sandusky, Ohio. Yeah. That's what they're doing. It's still doing pretty well, from what I understand.
Right.
Yeah.
Probably guys.
Yeah.
All right, Bill, I just wanted to let you know.
Chuck, I'll tell you, Chuck, small world, huh? Small world.
Very small world.
Because Elizabeth is what? Maybe 1,000 people. It's not that big.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's all it is. Oh, man. I mean, Elizabeth makes Gold Hill look pretty big, you know, I don't know, maybe about the same thing. It's sort of concentrated. Isn't it funny how small the world could be? I've never met anybody that was from Elizabeth, Pennsylvania. But, my mother actually came from Tunnelton, West Virginia, and then they moved to Elizabeth. Elizabeth was the big city. The big city moving out of the holler, as it were, okay? 27 after 6. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome. Hello.
Good morning, Bill.
Hey. Hey, Tom. How are you doing this morning? Welcome.
Well, pretty good. Trying to cope, like everybody else, with everything that's going on.
Trying to cope, huh?
Corresponding way. Yeah, right. With the changes. I've been corresponding with a friend down in Santa Cruz where I came from. And you know how everything in California is a prelude to what happens in Oregon? Well, she told me that what's happened down there is that apparently the state has passed some kind of law that removes all local jurisdiction of building and so forth. And so what they're doing in Santa Cruz is they're slapping up all these skyscrapers right down in Old Town, everywhere across Santa Cruz.
And
it's stacked back. The bottom floor is business, and all above it is housing and so forth. It's really, truly stacking back. And they're putting all these skyscrapers on basically riverbed sand. You know, when you get an earthquake, it something called liquefaction.
Oh yeah, that sand ends up being liquefied because there's always moisture in it, right? It's not dry sand because it's near the ocean, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like it's sort of like your litter box with a cat. You know, it looks and everything. You can pick it up and shake it back and forth, and it's all over the place. Well, that's the same thing that happens during an earthquake, dry or wet. And anyway, the key point is how the state has bypassed all local jurisdiction and so forth. And
did they do this by statute, or what was it, through legislation like what Oregon did a number of years ago with Senate Bill 100? Senate Bill 100 was really the beginning of the centralization of that land use planning. And we were the only state that really went all in on this.
Yeah, and there's still a lot of local control here. But imagine if they're going to use California as their model, that pretty soon that anything the state wants locally. You know, you talk a lot about the charter, and if that's not changed, it's very likely that we'll lose all control over what's going on. Kind of similar to what's you can't challenge a cell phone tower.
Yeah, because of federal preemption. Yeah, federal preemption on such matter. You know, I'm going to have to look this up. Did you find the underpinning of this? Because I've not read the stories about California. It doesn't surprise me what you're talking about with California centralizing the planning more, or trying to. They're probably looking at the success, if you want to call it that, of what Oregon has been doing through this. Maybe they could just do it through executive order. I'm not sure. I just don't know. I'm not familiar with the actual story that your friend's talking about.
Yeah, neither am I. I just heard about it yesterday.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see if we can make that. Let's see if we can find out more about that. All right. Hey, I really appreciate the tip at the start of it this morning. Okay. And we got
the People's Republic of Oregon.
Yeah, indeed. And by the way, even my friends in at school at the high school reunion on Sunday, they all know about Oregon. But you know, the funny thing is that the only thing they think about Oregon is Portland. You know, that's, you know, they think that what we're experiencing here in Southern Oregon is Portland, and it's not quite like that. But, you know, that's all they ever hear about. Everybody knows about it. In fact, a couple of my classmates had kids who ended up coming out to Portland and going to school or doing some work or something like that, and they hear the horror stories. But they think the entire state is nothing but Portland, and so I had to kind of set them straight that, you know, it's a little different down here. Just a little bit. But we got our problem. We got our challenges, too. All right?
Yep.
All right. Appreciate the call there, Tom. It's 6:32. We'll catch up on the rest of the news here coming up. And we appreciate you waking up here, too. This is the Bill Meyer Show. It's Bill Meyer, and here's another listener who saved at Sky Park Insurance. Meet Jason from Medford.
I've been with the same company for 4 years and heard Steve's commercial. I gave him a call, and he saved me nearly $1,000 a year on my two cars. Thanks, Steve.
Sky Park is an independent agency with providers like Progressive, Safeco, Foremost, and many more. Call Steve for a quote, 261-5444, or visit skyparkins.com.
Hi, this is Steve from Sky Park Insurance. At Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
All aboard!
The Oregon Coast Scenic Railroad is your opportunity to ride behind the living history of a historic locomotive engine along the beautiful Oregon coast. Book either the coastal excursion for the whole family or take that special someone on the romantic moonlight excursion that includes appetizers and refreshments. Secure your seats with the Oregon Coast Scenic Railroad now at OregonCoastScenic.org.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. A new fire is burning in southern Oregon in Klamath County. The Copperfield Fire has burned more than 3,200 acres just outside of Chiloquin, growing in gusty winds. Governor Tina Kotek declared it a conflagration, clearing the way for the Oregon State Fire Marshal to mobilize incident management teams and 8 task forces. The cause is yet to be determined. 3 people are dead after a small plane crashed into a townhouse in a Portland suburb. Authorities believe 2 people were on board the twin-engine Cessna that went down in the Fairview area Saturday morning. In addition to the pilot and a passenger on the plane, 1 resident of the townhouse was killed in the crash. A medical helicopter called to the scene of a fatal crash on I-5 Friday couldn't respond because of interference from a civilian drone flying over the crash. The accident killed Dustin Brown of Sweet Home. First responders were able to take 2 passengers to a hospital by ground instead. Bill London, KMED News.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason. Israel says it has liquidated another terrorist leader. This one, it says, was seen in a video of the horrific October 7th attack on innocent Israeli civilians. Due to get underway this week, the criminal tax evasion trial of presidential son Hunter Biden. It is one of the deadliest attacks by Russia since it invaded Ukraine more than 2 years ago. Ukrainian President Zelensky says 2 Russian ballistic missiles have struck in the east-central part of the country. At least 41 people have been killed, 180 others wounded in the Russian attack. New York's Columbia University, it was the epicenter of last spring's campus movement against the war in Gaza, is bracing for the return of protesters this semester, and students returning to class at Columbia today. On Wall Street, stocks opening lower this morning. More details at srnnews.com.
Progressive knows when you own a boat, life on land is a tough sell.
Come on down to land, where you can do things like clean your gutters, pay tolls, and even get the wrong thing you ordered. We got it all. Potholes, people talking at the movies, and don't forget about flat tires when it's raining. It's land.
Life on a boat is way more relaxing. So customize your coverage with Progressive, America's number one boat insurer. And relax, knowing you got the coverage you need. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Number one rating based on 2022 boat market share data from ratefilings.com.
This September.
Join us at the Expo for the best Rogue Broadband Brew Fest yet. On September 13th and 14th, this event features over 70 award-winning Pacific Northwest microbrews on tap. Just $20 for 5 tastes and a souvenir glass, or $25 for 10 tastes and a glass. And add 5 tastes for $5. And don't worry about missing the big game. Football will be on the big screens all weekend long. Remember when rock was young?
I'm still standing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hold me closer, Johnny Dancer.
Catch great music and the Elton John Experience indoors on Saturday. The Rogue Broadband Brew Fest, September 13th and 14th. Brought to you in part by the Friends of the Fair Foundation. And don't forget, Scotty McCreery is at the Bi-Mart Amphitheater the next Saturday.
Drinking cab in a solo. Solo in the cab of my truck.
Get your tickets now at theexpo.com.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
636, Curtis Houck, the managing editor of MRC Newsbusters. He's one of those guys that he spent his entire Labor Day weekend watching television and sound bites. So I think you did. Is that pretty much what you're doing half the time there, Curtis? I appreciate you having back on the show. Good morning, sir. Welcome.
Yeah. Good morning, Bill. Yeah, that's pretty much what I do. I mean, I watch the White House press briefing. I watch all three network morning shows. We used to have three different people to watch that, but now it's just me. So I watch 7 hours of television, 2 hours of CBS, 2 hours of ABC, 3 hours of news on NBC, and it's a lot. And I just tweet it out. And some people may think I work for the Grabian site, but no, we use Snapstream. And no, I actually don't have people working for me. I actually had that compliment. Someone in the White House press corps told me that one time when I saw them at an event, and they're like, "Do you have people tweeting for you?" And you're like, "Nah, dog, it's me, man." Yeah. This generation, we don't have time. We don't have money first. We don't have time for assistance.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of funny. It reminds me when people come up to me and say, "Hey, you know, if you could get your staff to get back with me," and then I start laughing. Right. You know, that kind of thing. Right.
Like, okay.
Yeah, we do it all ourselves for sure.
We're like the great Al Rushbow, doing it with one hand tied behind my back.
Yeah, exactly. He actually did have some staff, though, I guess. But that being said, though, you do great work over at Newsbusters, keeping us apprised of such things. Now, I was flying back to a high school reunion Thursday, and I ended up missing the CNN talk with Dana Bash, and of course the situation with Kamala Harris. And I read about it, and from what I'm reading, it didn't go all that well. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't particularly great. And I have a feeling you kind of watched that. Could you break down what actually happened with that thing? Anything of import that we should keep in mind?
Yeah, it's one of those things. So I would say last week I was giving out letter grade to Dana Bash. You know, if I'm feeling like being a nice person, I'm going to give it a C-. Mm-hmm. I think that's where I've had a few days to think about it, and I think that's where I'm going to be, D+. If I'm feeling really whiny about just life in general, but I'm going to stick to a C-, because that's the kind of guy I am. She wasn't quite like talking about, you know, what's your favorite thing to cook in the kitchen, because that's one of the left's big things. You know, Kamala's a great cook. Oh my gosh, she's America's cook. But also, it was not like a hardball session. It was not, surprisingly, Stephanopoulos with Joe Biden after the debate. You know, it wasn't that. The thing was, CNN, like all networks, wanted this interview. They wanted this interview so bad. And you wonder behind the scenes, like, what do they agree to? What did they give up to be able to get this interview? You know this. You've been in the business long enough. Yeah. There's kind of jockeying when it comes to these big interviews. And so you wonder, and I think one of the things that was clear that CNN bit the bullet and agreed to was that it would be a relatively short interview. The thinking was it was 18 minutes. It was probably about 20, actually. So Dana Bash had very little time. So she made the decision to try to cover as many topics as possible, but not actually go in depth. She let Kamala just spew word salads, and then she would move on. The only thing she really followed up on was the economy, asking whether Bidenomics works. And that one was pretty effective because Kamala, in essence, said yes. Yes, but any part of the answer where it basically involves you saying yes, that's pretty devastating. And what Republicans want to do in this election is tie her to Joe Biden. But she let her skate by on Afghanistan. She let her skate by on all sorts of issues, past positions about defunding the police, ending ICE, having death row inmates vote, ending private insurance. Those are some issues that she let him skate by on. And Tim Walz, she let him skate by on his military rank, on his time leading Minnesota through the George Floyd, you know, riots, those kinds of things. So she took a cursory view of things, which I don't think was particularly effective, you know, given that there was the one soundbite that went around where she was giving her a multiple choice answer. She's like, have you changed your policy positions because you realize it's not good politics? Have you legitimately changed your mind, or is it some sort of combination of the two? And those kind of questions are just so unhelpful.
Yeah, I would really love to see the 20 minutes or so that did not get aired, because apparently they talked for about 40 minutes, from what I understand, and maybe even more than that. But we only saw 18 minutes of this. Now, back, was there anything said about Afghanistan, though? Anything said about Afghanistan at all? And the reason I bring this up is that at my high school reunion, this is still a big topic of conversation there. I was driving on 113 past Edison High School, which is the Max Soviak High School. And Max was one of the 13 young men, the soldiers who ended up dying in that. And said that was a big deal in that small town in Ohio. It's still a big deal. It left a big hole in the community.
I mean, I think, you know, for previous generations, that video of the helicopter taking off in Saigon there in, was it 1975? That, you know, I think the image of the people running alongside the plane is going to stick through this generation. That's going to be the thing that when they show reels in like History Channel specials, or whenever CNN does the 2020s, if they actually, you know, do it correctly, that'll be an image that just indelibly like stuck with us. And people have said it, and even Democrats admit that that was where Joe Biden's poll numbers kind of took a nosedive, didn't really recover.
Yeah.
You could argue that and schools is why, where I am in Northern Virginia, dark blue Northern Virginia, the Commonwealth here elected Glenn Youngkin, because people saw what was going on in Afghanistan. And even though it was a, you know, it's a state office, we have a heavy military presence in the state. And they said, no, this is not working out. This is not working out that great. But no, it did not come up. And it was interesting you point that out, Bill, because, yes, it was Dana Bash who interviewed Kamala Harris in 2021, right after Joe Biden said, screw it, we're going forward with this thing. She asked her, were you the last person in the room for this? And she said, I was. And do you still fully support this? Yes, I do. So, yeah, there really wasn't anything about this, which is surprising given how much the liberal media have been committed to the bit of making this Arlington visit like some huge scandal, completely manufactured, just like what you see them trying to delegitimize the Supreme Court, completely made out of thin air.
And in other words, we are still looking at just a completely manufactured news image. And Dana Bash may not necessarily been in the tank, but she's certainly swimming in it to a as a toe in it. There's still no serious challenging going on with anything of the Harris campaign. Nothing.
Right. I think that's the debate. I think that's what the debate is for. And you have enough of her allies in the media who say, well, she doesn't really need to talk to us because she can just have a conversation with voters, which is the dumbest thing in the world, because, you know, it's these rallies with your hardest core parts of your base. This isn't like, you know, New Hampshire town halls where anybody can just really wing it and ask whatever they want. You know, it's not like New Hampshire or Iowa where voters can go up with a microphone and play gotcha or ask genuine questions. You don't have that in the general election nowadays with these manufactured and very pampered images of these candidates, especially the Democratic side. Are you kidding me? No. And that's why Tim Walz walked away the other day when they were asked about the hostages that were murdered by Hamas. He just kind of was like, thanks, everybody. He didn't know what to say.
This is it's disturbing because I don't like to say this because it's true that most of America still gets the majority of what it thinks about when it comes to political candidates from the people like Dana Bash and essentially ABC, CBS, NBC, right? You know, that kind of situation. Yeah. That's the reality. That's still, even though I know that their ratings have been lower, if most people, I guess if you want to call it not necessarily low information, but just not great information voters, the ones that are just kind of going out there and doing their live, right? They watch Good Morning America, right? That's where they're getting most of their stuff from.
Exactly. And I think that's the key. I mean, the reality is people still tune in for these network newscasts. You know, it still pulls in, you know, close to 20 million people sometimes on a given night between the ABC, CBS, NBC. And that's why a lot of our studies are based on these networks, because we all agree this is going to be a very close election where both sides fight over every single vote. So I think it's important to show that while fewer people watch it than they did maybe 30 years ago, it's still a sizable number. The people that tune into ABC and NBC in particular at 6:30 p.m. local time, that is still more than any show on cable. More people watch that than Fox News' The Five or Bill O'Reilly during his heyday or Tucker Carlson during his heyday. So I think it's important to give people that view and to show them this is what's going on.
Now, and how is President Trump is what almost universally portrayed poorly in those newscasts, I would have to think.
President Biden?
No, President Trump. No, President Trump. You know, the way former President Trump is portrayed is universally most likely bad, right?
Yeah, our most recent number was 89% through the middle of last month, almost the middle of last month. And that basically tracks what we've been seeing for the past, you know, 5, 6, 7 years that we've been counting him on the evening newscast. It's right about high 80s, low to mid 90s. His number really hasn't budged that much. But the most disturbing one that I found last year was they spent by nearly 10-to-1 ratio at that point in the heat of the Republican primary. They spent nearly 10 times more time on Trump's legal troubles than what Trump and his Republican opponents believed about policy.
Wow.
Because that's what they wanted the focus.
They wanted the story. And this is why, you know, now in my high school, most of my classmates that I went to the reunion with, vast majority are conservative. There were two or three progressives, you know, out of the group there. And in Ohio, they felt a little out of sorts. They were not particularly comfortable in Ohio. Ohio was relatively, you know, red for them for the most part. But all they would talk about, and what I got from them, because I actually engaged some of them, we talked a little bit of politics while I was there, and these are people that are in battleground states. I think of Western Pennsylvania. This is going to be a big deal in this presidential election. It is such a hatred. I don't think I've ever seen such illogical hatred. This one man is going to destroy absolutely everything. And these people who I went to school with, they really believed it, Curtis. And this is the first time. Now, I knew that these people existed out in the West Coast here in Oregon, you know, where, you know, we are right now. There's a lot of that. But I can't help it. But a lot of that is through mainstream news coverage. They really do believe that he is out to destroy reproductive rights and destroy democracy and to just put us into a totalitarian state, which is ironic, given that the federal government governs more totalitarianish day after day.
Oh, yeah. But yet, you know, you and I engage in fear mongering. You know, Republicans peddle fear. They paint a doomsday apocalyptic worldview of everything, and the Democrats are just fine. Nothing with the it's totally based on fact. It's not based on emotion. I mean, it's absolutely pathetic. And that's exactly why you saw very quickly after President Trump was shot, the networks turned on him and they suggested, well, he's not calling for calm and he's not, you know, telling people to not blame Democrats and he's not doing this. And it's like, guys, you know, it's incredible. It's like they're doing her skirt was too short excuse, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, really, yeah, we're always told not to blame the victim, right?
Right. And yet here they were blaming the victim for this, suggesting that his rhetoric contributed to him getting shot. You know, basically he had what was coming to him. And that's just horribly irresponsible. And the media have not learned their lesson at all. They did this after 2016. They were like, oh, my gosh, maybe like we missed the boat on this thing.
Well, but obviously, Curtis, and by the way, I'm talking with MRC Newsbusters managing editor Curtis Halk. Obviously, though, they're still behaving this way because it works. It works for them.
It does. Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So even though this is a toss up election, from what it's looking at right now, this seems to be a very toss up, and it's not even really a 50 state election right now. It's really down to, you know, where are things going to be persuadable in the battleground states. Now, part of though people understanding what they're going to be voting for will be the debate. I'll be curious how much of that ends up happening, or if Kamala even goes in there. But what I'm kind of curious about is you've been keeping watch of press conferences in which people can just throw questions at Mrs. Harris time and time again and just fire away. And has there been anything scheduled that you're aware of? What are we looking at right now?
No, because the new thing, I don't know if folks have seen this. If you have not seen it, you should look it up on social media. Her new excuse, her new way to avoid the press is she does the fake phone call thing. She had earbuds in her ears when she got out of the car, like she was on the phone talking to somebody, and as she's going up the escalator for Air Force Two, she puts her phone to her ear, even though she has earbuds in, and her phone screen is black.
Oh, so that whenever a tough question comes in, someone calls her phone, right?
Yeah. How about that? I'm like, oh no. And you notice this during the Dana Bash interview. There's certain points where she was like looking down. She didn't quite know where to look or put her hands because she's probably used to having notes in front of her and having to think on her feet. She's just was a little handicapped there. But yes, this is the new excuse. But it's like, lady, if you're going to do the phone thing with the earbuds, don't then put your phone to your ear. You already have earbuds in.
If you're trying to fake the media out, yeah, take out the earbuds if you're going to put the phone there. Yeah. Okay. And yet, I'm not convinced that it won't work. I'm not convinced at this point, Curtis, that she will not, that she'll be able to fool a large enough majority of the electorate.
No. No, the AP had a story last week that said Kamala's having it both ways, in that she's running as an incumbent and as a change candidate. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm thinking, well, who's responsible for that? Who's responsible for allowing her to say that? The Trump campaign is struggling because, you know, they're seen as the incumbent, which is one of the most ludicrous things I've ever seen. I mean, 2008, I think, was the high watermark where a lot of people who didn't know the media were biased realized it. Mm-hmm. I think this might be the worst because it is straight up gaslighting. It's arguably worse than what happened with Joe Biden, trying to tell us Joe Biden's fine when he's not. Because at the very least with that, it was visual. You know, Joe Biden was still going out in public, and you'd be like, man, he looks terrible, which, by the way, he looked awful yesterday. He looked, you know, deer in the headlights, whatever they shot him up with, clearly doesn't work anymore because he was just, Kamala had to, like, almost, like, hold his hand carrying him out there, you know, like they're walking down the wedding aisle, like they're part of the bridal party. But they can't do – with Kamala Harris, though, people know that, you know, she's not, you know, cognitively impaired. So, you know, they can just say, oh, she's focused in, you know, many meetings on behalf of the American people, whatever nonsense.
So I guess are we just kind of placing every hope that we have for some kind of truth to come out of next week's debate, assuming that happens and goes off?
Yeah. I mean, the key is for President Trump is it's already being leaked out. They're making it clear that Kamala is going to try and needle Donald Trump to make him lash out at her. So she can do the I'm speaking BS.
Right.
They can sell their T-shirts. Just like she did with Joe Biden in the busing thing, you know, picture of her as a little girl waiting for the school bus. But
saying, I want freedom. Yeah, sure she did. Freedom.
Yeah, that's why Tulsi Gabbard coming on, I think, was one of the best moves he's made in this entire campaign because, as we know, she single-handedly ended her campaign. And the look on Kamala Harris's face when she talked about her record as a prosecutor, oh, I've never seen somebody look like so squirmy, like, mom, can you come pick me up on the debate stage?
What I was going to ask you, a final question I had here this morning, and this has nothing to do with anything we've been talking about so far, Did you see the Reagan movie yet?
I have not.
Okay.
I have not. But our Brent Baker, our VP Publications, co-founder of the MRC, is currently on the Young Americans Foundation, America's Foundation's cruise in the Mediterranean, and he just saw it last night for a third time.
Really?
And he loves it very, very much. The people at YAF who owned the Reagan Ranch and Reagan's boyhood home in Illinois are very supportive of the movie. So I think in Michael Reagan, the conservative son of Ronald Reagan, is in full support of it. So I think if all those people are on board, you know, somebody who wasn't born then, who was not around then, that is those are good stamps of approval.
Yeah, the reason I was bringing this up that on your website, newsbusters.org, is that they talked about how 97% audience approval, but the liberal critics hate it. But of course, I'm not surprised about that. So if the liberal critics hate it, that it must be good. Must be a good thing.
We see this with all these conservative movies too. It's the funniest thing to go to Rotten Tomatoes and see the, you know, the splat, the 37% or 20% from critics, and then you look over on the right side and it's a giant thing of popcorn for audiences. It's the best.
Okay, very good. I appreciate your update on this, and I hope that Kamala does at least. Well, of course, the thing is, she's doing almost like a virtual basement. She's not in the basement. She just doesn't talk to anybody, right? You know, she goes out and about.
Right.
She just doesn't really talk to anybody openly. We'll see if this changes if as the campaign goes on, because there's not that much left of it. If finally some of the people will start turning and say, hey, we have to get some answers on some policy questions here, all right? And I really appreciate you coming on, Curtis. Curtis Houck, who is the, of course, managing editor over newsbusters.org. Thank you so much. We'll have you back. And thanks for the talk. All right. Be well.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
Yeah. 657. This is on News Talk, News Talk 106.3 KMED and 99.3 KBXG.
Hey, ladies, come in and take a look at our Anna Zuckerman collection at Father and Son Jewelry.
It certainly is stunning. The jewelry has been worn by actresses on the red carpet at the Oscars.
Ladies can look like a million bucks and no one can tell the difference between the synthetic lab-created stones and gems. And the settings are breathtaking.
Come be dazzled by the Anna Zuckerman collection at Father and Son Jewelry on Jackson between Riverside and Central.
If you have an appliance that's giving you trouble, Just-In-Time Appliance is your fast and affordable mobile appliance repair, serving the Rogue Valley. Just-In-Time services and repairs all brands. Major appliances often can be repaired, extending their life and saving you money. So give Just-In-Time Appliance a no-obligation call for advice on whether it can be fixed with the best warranty available. Before you go to the expense of buying a new appliance, call Just-In-Time Appliance online at justintimeappliance.com.
With so many working and doing business from home, it's good to know there's a community business center to help. A Street Print and Parcel is a one-stop shop for everything from large format printing and scanning to blueprints, architectural plans, and shipping. Their Studio 10 expansion offers passport photos, photo mounting, fine art scanning, art reproductions, signs and banners, negative and slide scanning, canvas prints, and so much more. Located in Ashland on A Street across from Ashland Hardware. Their motto, we create it, print it, pack it, and ship it. A Street Print and Parcel and Studio 10.
Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. The best roofing pros in Southern Oregon. Decades of protection just around the corner. Specializing in metal roofing that stands up to inclement weather conditions year-round. Westfall's portable snap lock machine pulls right up to your door and gets the job done. Get the protection you need with a new metal roof done the Westfall way. Done right every time. Call or text today. Get a quote tomorrow. Financing available. Westfall Roofing. We've got you covered. 941-3736.
CCB number 750730.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
KMED and KMED HD1 is where you are. Eagle Point, Medford. KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford. KPXG, Grants Pass. Thanks you for waking up here. I got to tell you, the trip to and from Ohio was quite interesting. And in both directions, the entire best part of the trip was the Rogue Valley International Airport. If you travel much out of Southern Oregon and you're flying, maybe you understand that. Maybe you probably already know that. But I have to tell you, of all the airports, it's relatively small scale. It's something which is easy to navigate and negotiate. And the people relatively friendly. It's laid out well. It's relatively efficient. It's not hard to get in and out of. I just really enjoyed it. And that was the best part of the trip when it comes to the actual traveling of it, getting in and out of the Rogue Valley International. No problem there about that. And even the TSA, not that much of a problem, you know, here in Southern Oregon. No, I don't have that TSA pre-check or whatever it is, and I'm still driving on an old driver's license. I haven't got the real ID yet. I'm going to have to do that, I guess, if I'm going to fly out again. But, oh, boy, when you start getting into some of the larger international airports, then things start getting pretty bad. San Francisco, I really hate the San Francisco airport. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because I hate San Francisco, the city, and it just kind of seeps into my opinion of the airport. But Denver, when I flew out, I flew to Denver first and then went from Denver to Cleveland Hopkins International. And Denver's a great airport. I have to say they have done a really good job with making that new one, and especially with their use of people movers, you know, the level escalator type things that you're able to step on and move very quickly. If you're tired, you can just hang on to the escalator handle and then let everybody pass you on the left. But other than that, it's very efficient, and you can get from point A to point B relatively quickly. And so that part was really good. That was not a problem getting through Denver. Never has been a problem getting through the new Denver. Hopkins International. That's a different kettle of fish, let me tell you. Hopkins International is still laid out the same way that it was when my dad was flying out of Hopkins routinely for air travel as a sales guy in the plastics industry back in the 1970s. We were driving there. It's still laid out the same. I don't think it's had any. It's just had remodeling, but there haven't been major renovations, that at least none that I could tell. They just ended up getting rid of the burnt orange colors, you know, and that. And what was fascinating to me is that no people movers there. No people movers, no way. So if you get from one concourse to another, you're walking, and you're walking a lot. I counted it. I got into Hopkins International Friday morning at about midnight. I was an hour and a half, 2 hours late because we had thunderstorms. Actually, I ended up flying out of Denver into New Mexico before we would turn east because the thunderstorms were just so serious that night. And they had just a lot of big thunderstorm activity there in the Midwest. Of course, if you've ever been out there, huge storms, hail, you know, that kind of stuff. I was happy that we ended up bypassing it, so it ended up being fine. So we got there late. I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to get to my rental car and then I'm going to have to spend the night at Hopkins. It's like, yikes, nobody wants to spend the night at Hopkins. But got off the plane at just after midnight, East Coast time, so it was a little bit after 9 o'clock, and so I had been traveling, 10 hours, you know, 10 and a half hours at that point. So I get out, and I'm going to go to baggage check, where you retrieve the baggages and get to the ground transportation to go over to the rental car places. They have the rental cars all consolidated in one spot. That was good. But 22 minutes of brisk walking to go from my gate to baggage claim. Now, I'm not elderly, and so I was able to do it. It was no problem. But I was surprised at how you just walked and you walked and you walked and you walked. No trams, no people movers, no nothing like that. I got to tell you, if you're an elderly person that has difficulty walking, you're going to have to get on one of those carts or have the airlines provide that to you or do the wheelchair, because I tell you, there's going to be no walking. And you definitely get your steps in. If you have one of your smartwatches, Hopkins International, it's going to be really good. Now, coming back the other way, it was the most inefficient TSA layout. And it's one of those places. Cleveland was much like Chicago, in which you have people just yelling at you. Everybody's just yelling at you. It's like you have the entire security state barking at you at all times. And that wasn't real pleasant. Yeah, we got through it, got on, got back. I was so happy to see Rogue Valley International Airport. They do a great job here. They really do. The plane ride, United, it was okay going out. They don't have any protein now on any kind of the snacks. I mean, a couple pieces of cheeses, that's not really good. It's like, how many carbs do you want, Mr. Meyer, is essentially what they're always asking you these days, I think. And coming back, and I don't know if anybody who works within the airline industry can tell me how this happened, but when I was coming back and getting on the plane at Cleveland Hopkins to fly to San Francisco yesterday, there was this huge bulldog that was boarding in front of me, and he hurled all over the aisle. And so we were kind of told to walk over it or step over the hurling. And what I'm trying to figure out is that what was this bulldog doing inside the plane? Because he wasn't wearing a service dog harness. Does anybody know what's going on with this? There was an actual genuine service dog with a service dog harness on it. But normally, you know, they have the service dog harness. You know it. And frankly, the service dogs behave really well. But this big so-called, you know, this bulldog gets on there, And so now the flight attendants are not allowed to pick anything up these days. I don't know, maybe it's a union or something, but flight attendants are only there to be Nazis and yell at you when, you know, when you're told to sit down, you know, in the post 9/11 world, I think. Right. But so we have the hurling bulldog, and then we, the passengers, are just supposed to step over this gingerly as we get to our seat. So I end up getting to my seat, and that's fine. And then, for some reason, my section of the plane, which was near the back in steerage, is the not one, not two, not three, but four screaming babies or young toddlers that, of course, don't have tickets, but they're just sitting on their parents' laps, and they're all miserable, and they're making everybody else miserable. And I never remembered so many kids flying on planes. Maybe that's something that happened. But one thing I will say is that now I know it's a holiday, so it was an extra busy day. That must have been what was going on. But hey, what was the bulldog doing in the plane in the first place? I used to recall having to take the dog and put it in a crate, and it was put in the cargo bay. And is that over now? Does that no longer happen? Are we now at this point where you love me as a passenger, you love my dog? If anybody who works in the airline industry knows, please let me know, okay? Because it's open phones for the next 20 minutes. But I really do have to wonder about that. What was the bulldog doing there? What is the policy? It's kind of odd. You're on the Bill Myers Show.
Wildfires.